Everyone, welcome for joining, and thank you for joining us today for State of Our Workforce, where each month we take a journey together into the heart of workforce innovation and explore how to build an equitable workforce. I'm Carrie Felton, and I'm a program director here at the National Fund for Workforce Solutions, and I am guest hosting today's State of Our Workforce while the wonderful Michelle Wilson is on a well-deserved sabbatical. Shout out to Michelle Wilson. Hope you're not watching this right now and you're resting and relaxing. And so as we continue to explore the anthropology of work, something that has emerged for us as a topic we want to dig into more is this topic of language justice. So we met our guests today when we were doing our career navigation research project led by Michelle Wilson. And part of the interviews we wanted to do for that project were with workers who primarily spoke Spanish. And we wanted to ensure that to get the best information possible that they were able to speak in their language they felt most comfortable speaking in. So we connected with an interpretation service and through conversations about language access and language justice, we discovered this sort of rich framework for how to think about it. So we are really honored to have our guests today, Andrea Valencia and Annabelle Garay from Linguificent, to help us better understand what language justice is and why it's so critical to building more equitable workplaces. So welcome, Andrea and Annabelle.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you for having us. And Michelle, we also hope that you're having such a great time during your sabbatical. It was such a pleasure to work with you over here in the Bay Area.
Wonderful. Yes, thanks so much.
So let's dive right in. Before we get too far into it, what is language justice? And from your experience in your work, why is it so important?
Yeah, well, language justice is basically a concept that has started to become really popular since, as far as I know, Roberto Tijerina and Alice Johnson started working on it, designing it as a framework from the Highlander Research and Education Center. And basically, the way I understand this framework, this concept, is that it's based in respect. Respect for other communities, respect that there are already multilingual spaces happening, and they must be visibilized. And, you know, organizations strive to create multilingual spaces, but oftentimes they don't realize that there's no need necessarily to create it, but to just let the multilingual space be and have people who are the main actors really tell you what they're needing, as opposed to as an organization kind of like imposing or coming in with, you know, different English speaking or dominant language principles. So basically it focuses on the idea that everyone has the right to communicate in their own native language, that you can express the way you're thinking in such language. And I think that, you know, taking the burden off the person who's in need of the language services and making that burden actually visible, and that is not the fault of the person who needs the language services, is just, it's so important, because it's not a burden. It's mm-hmm. not a problem. It's just a way of living. And, you know, as interpreters, both Annabelle and myself, we feel like language justice, you know, this framework has been such a great answer to a lot of the things that we've been seeing and finding when you're out there in the field interpreting. Normally, traditionally, the interpreter does not insert themselves into the speech or the situation. But when you're working in settings like the ones we work in, like in a community setting where there's nonprofits fighting for against social injustices. You know, we can see that the interpreter starts to step into the murky waters of becoming an advocate. And why must that be, you know, a murky type of feeling and, you know, feelings of fearing saying something or standing up for injustices that you may see in the workplace? And so I think that language justice as a framework really just provides you with tools that you can apply to all these different cases, scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, that resonates with me. We talk about racial equity and inclusion in the workplace and also in our workforce services and our training programs. And so much of it is about switching from just like the dominant norm being, you know, starting with that and kind of flipping and kind of saying, let's start with the learner, let's start with the worker and see what they need and flip the script, and the power shifts a little bit there. So that is resonating with me. Anything you wanted to add, Annabelle?
I think it's a way of viewing language justice is saying we're all participating. We all have something to do in order to make this work. And it's not just, oh, that person needs interpretation because they are dominant in another language. And right. It's viewing as all of us require interpretation, because if I'm a monolingual English speaker, then that also is for me to be able to understand this person and to hear their questions and their perspective, so that it's two-way and not just that person needs it. It's for all of us.
Right. No, that makes sense. So let me ask you, like, what are some of the common language barriers that you've encountered as interpreters, or that you've observed workers encountering, you know, in the workplace or in other settings that you've observed? And sort of what are the implications of those language barriers?
Go ahead. There's a lot. I think if you're talking about as far as interpreters, you know, I think we've seen this with, especially in California, where court interpreters who work for the superior courts have gone on strike in previous years because of the compensation issue. You know, it's a profession that requires a lot of education and investing in it constantly, and the wages haven't necessarily kept up. So there's definitely been that aspect of it. And you know, and that, of course, goes to workers' rights and you know, the working conditions and your compensation is a big part of it. I think when we're looking at places where we provide services, there's also, you know, there's a whole scope of things where maybe a place where you work at says, oh, well, you're bilingual. How about you translate this for me? And not recognizing that being bilingual first has a lot of varying degrees to it, but it's also an asset. And by not recognizing that, A, that person has an additional asset to contribute, and not recognizing it in compensation and not recognizing it in time. They still have their regular work to do, but you're also expecting them to, you know, work on a translation or in interpreting for a client or somebody else. And then there's, you know, every day there's, especially here in the US, I mean, there are a lot of workplaces I think are multilingual. Even if you don't think of it that way, but your workers speak of a number of languages. And when you have that very diverse workforce language-wise, you know, you have to be able to make sure that, hey, did that employee manual get to that person? Do they know how to contact, who to contact? in case they need help with their health insurance or whatever it may be. So it's a range of things, and it has implications for all of us as workers, in how we're able to just conduct ourselves at work, what happens to us at work, how we can advocate for ourselves.
Yeah. What's coming up for me as you're both speaking is, you know, having worked with companies and organizations who maybe can go so far as to like see, oh yeah, I kind of see what you're saying. Like, yeah, it would be nice if people could understand the employee manual in their own native language. But actually, you know, moving toward a language justice framework and a multilingual space feels like it could be challenging. So can you talk a little bit about how you see organizations, companies really embracing some of these language justice strategies and kind of moving beyond checking a box or tokenism and really embedding this in the workplace?
Yeah, I think basically, you know, there are some really good places where they include their workforce. They make it more visible. It's they open a two-way communication channel. They're not just taking input from them, but they're also being willing to implement the input that they're giving them. They're essentially saying, you know, we're not the only ones here in the room. There's other voices, and those other voices also need to be interpreted or translated to be made accessible so that we can all get to the gist of things, what we're really wanting to do as an organization. And so I think like that's so important, because oftentimes really being able to take into account these other communities, to include them, to say as an organization, yes, we must compensate bilingual employees, but we must also bring into the room professional interpreters, language services, because sometimes a bilingual employee, that's not just enough. Knowing when to where those lines are and not being afraid to ask the people that are there with you, and if they don't have the answer, you know, basically just knowing like you're not alone in that room that you're sitting. And so being able to take this feedback really means that you're seeing the other person instead of basically just And we were speaking a little bit about this before, just authorizing the interpreters and the workers. You're saying, no, I'm taking a look, you know, we're checking our funding streams, our budget for the year. Maybe during the first quarter, you were, as an organization, you weren't really foreseeing how much it was going to cost to bring in language interpretation services, but that's okay, because that's something that you can take and submit for the next quarter or the next funding cycle, and then start to see this and really implementing it so that people feel comfortable enough to just speak up and bring their voice into the room, which is ultimately the goal.
Right, yeah. One more follow-up on that, Annabelle. I'm curious, like, what about, you know, how can organizations think about technology? So I think that's a thing that we say, like, well, let's use Google Translate or let's do these other things.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's, you know, technology can be a really great tool. It's something that, you know, we all use in some way. But I think it's also very important to think about, it has limitations, although it's great. And, you know, we keep hearing about how wonderful AI is and how it's becoming smarter and smarter. There are limitations. And I think every interpreter or translator has come across different signs or postings or different items that you realize clearly a machine did it. It wasn't a person. And it can have, you know, the opposite effect. If you were trying to communicate and inform people, you actually may leave them confused, or really they're not going to look at you as trustworthy, because, you know, I have an example of one particular time where a client used Google Translate to translate an agenda, and they were planning on taking photos after the end of the session. And they referred to it as headshots. And so when it was translated on the computer, it became something other, and it read as shots to the head.
Oh no.
Which is also very triggering, because you know, for somebody that maybe has been through some violence, and somebody did mention what you just wrote up there is very triggering for me. Right. And so, you know, so those things can happen, and they do happen more than we'd like to think. So be very careful. No machine is going to understand those nuances of language, that slang, and that part of culture that's embedded in language better than a human can.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's so important. You know, I think it's language is so visceral, and it varies and changes with the context. And especially in the United States, where you have such a broad population of Spanish speakers. You know, if you can think in English, there's all these different accents and ways of saying this. Just imagine in Spanish, you have people from all Latin America. So really relying on technology. Yes, but with a professional, maybe you know, run all this stuff through the staff that's supporting you in disseminating information in a different language, and they've already been trained, or they're bilingual, and they know what kinds of things to watch out for. I think it's so important what Annabelle is saying, just stressing the importance of having a human at the helm. Mm-hmm. And yes, I mean, using technology, we're not against technology, but we have to know the gaps, the pitfalls, and where it can lead you. Mm-hmm. And this also speaks of really being aware of what you're doing, like basically saying, so English is the dominant language in the room. So how can I bring other perspectives into the room? You know, providing information in other languages, yes. And if I'm not the one that's gonna be reading that information, then running that through someone before you're putting it up on the screen. Sure that you're not sending any imaginary shots to someone's head.
Oh, what a like impactful example. Well, I thank you both so much for being here. I mean, I have like several takeaways from this conversation, but it's resonating so much that, you know, if you're a company or an organization that wants to think about equity and inclusion, like you have to think about the impact of language and how you move it toward a more multilingual space. And then it can't be something that you just try to throw in last minute, that it takes some planning and some resources behind it. I am thinking about my coworker, Ricardo, who is our systems change director, who always talks about how meaningful it is when he hears his own name, you know, spoken by Spanish speakers. And there's a feeling of inclusion that you just can't get whenever you're not in those spaces. So it definitely is resonating with me. And if I, you know, if you're a Spanish speaker or a Polish speaker or a Mandarin speaker, and you have your choice between a very like English-centric workplace or a job that has more multilingual culture to it, like it's, you're gonna pick the multilingual job any day. So it really is makes a lot of sense for us. So thank you both for being here. Thank you for everyone who joined us from LinkedIn Live. Please make sure to follow National Fund on LinkedIn so you can keep up with all the latest state of our workforces. Please tune in next month. We'll continue our conversation on the anthropology of work. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks so much, Carrie.
Thanks. State of Our Workforce is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Josh Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce on our website at www.nationalfund.org. State of Our Workforce is also available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you may listen. State of Our Workforce airs live monthly on LinkedIn. Follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to get updates about the next live recording of State of Our Workforce.